críticas que tuvo el programa, que duró 8 años activo, ahora lo dividieron. Es un programa que está dividido. Antes eran programas de estímulos fiscales y ahora se llaman programas de estímulos para la innovación, y se dividen en 3 partes, ¿no? Que bueno, ahí siguen entrando las mismas empresas, y ahora la ventaja, por así decirlo, es que dejan entrar algunas más pequeñas, pero pues siempre los mayores recursos se las llevan las transnacionales, ¿no?
Para escuchar la entrevista completa con la periodista Erika Ramírez y leer su reportaje investigativo sobre cómo el gobierno mexicano ha beneficiado a grandes compañías transnacionales condonándoles el pago de impuestos, pueden visitar nuestro blog en pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com. Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a la revista Contralínea de México, a Telesur y a la Radio del Sur de Venezuela, a la Radio de la ONU de Estados Unidos y a Radio Tierra de Chile. A nombre de Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Yes, tuned. We're on the air. Yes, we are, sweetheart. We're back on the air. That's 101.1 FM, as well as www.freakradio.org. In the studio with me, that alternate radio maestro, the vicious curb hugger Chris, back from exile from the hills, roaming about the city, causing trouble. Hey there, Chris.
I have monitors. I have mic. Hey, welcome, Santa Cruz.
And Chris is, of course, running his own radio station, which we've already announced here for all of you streamers who catch chubby. Let me put that again. Checked us out last Sunday when I was streaming. Chris is, he's broadcasting at?
I am broadcasting at Unbroken Chain Internet Radio, and we are located at ucir.limewebs.com. However, I'm a little late, so I'm still in the news. Your show's not on the air yet, but another 3 minutes.
Typical.
I'm a little behind schedule.
Chris is actually rebroadcasting my shows. He's got a marathon show coming up on what?
Sunday, we're going to do 6 hours of Bathrobe Spheres broadside. We're going to do first year live show as regularly scheduled on the website, our website, and then immediately following that, we're going to rebroadcast the great debate between Ed Frye and Mayor Rockin, and that's actually all part of a day-long broadcast that we're doing to help Peace Camp 2010 celebrate their two-month anniversary, and you can learn about Peace Camp 2010 at peacecamp2010.blogspot.com.
And actually, you're going to be hearing direct reports from Peace Camp 2010 last night. I'm going to play those right now while I try to get in touch with eager Ed Frye at the debate with Sam Farr. He's actually not debating with Farr directly unless he gets 2 minutes at the mic. Everybody gets 2 minutes in the Farr extravaganza. It's on happening up on High Street at the mission there. I've got to actually find out exactly where that is, but it's going on from 6 to 8 for those of you who'd like to check out Representative Farr, the one who he has been voting for the military budget, but occasionally votes against the war. You know, a little here, a little there. He's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And
the first one.
Ed Frye has, of course, been dogging him from the left on issues like methyl bromide and homelessness, where Farr hasn't done diddly squat around, let's say, requiring cities to stop criminalizing the homeless, right? A proposal that was made 5 or 6 years ago, and I don't think it got terribly far in Congress, but it was being proposed that cities that do criminalize the homeless have their federal funding cut. I don't think Farr took a position on that, but I'm not entirely sure. Let's hear something from Peace Camp 2010, and I'll try and get a hold of old Sam, not Sam, Ed. Maybe Ed will give us the lowdown on what's happening in Farland up there in on High Street, and I'll try to give you the exact address of that shortly. And again, this is Peace Camp 2010, September 1st, last night at the library area, although I also kind of strayed back and forth. Peace Camp 2010 generally has a meeting at 8:15 every night. It was looking pretty sparse last night, but we'll see if they pick it up again tonight.
Well, here we are at the another evening at Peace Camp 2010. It's almost about 8:15. I'm here at the satellite radio. Here's Scum whooping it up again.
Hey, you know what, dude? I was at the beach, right? And a cop comes up to me and he's giving me and my friend a ticket for sitting.
Ah, yes. And where exactly was he giving you a ticket for sitting?
Right down by the beach.
And what did he say to you before he ticketed you?
And he goes, you guys ever had a ticket before? I said, yeah, I've had a ticket for sleeping right down by the peace camp.
Uh-huh.
He said, oh, by the peace camp. And I said, yeah, dude, I'm going to be down there because I think you guys still have unjust laws and there are people who are brave enough to stand up for it. And he goes...
Or lie down for it.
Yeah, and he goes, what are you talking... He said, what are you going talking about? Gary, Robert, and Becky?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes... Are those who you're talking about? Because they've been at this for a couple goddamn months, and no one wants to back them up. No one wants to do this. No one wants to do that.
Inspiring word.
And I go, well, you know what? Ed's an attorney, and he has their backs. Every goddamn homeless motherfucker in this fucking place has their backs. What the fuck are you telling me that nobody wants to have their backs on this?
These were police officers who said what?
Police officer, and he said, well, one person can't. He said, yeah, there was... He said to me, he said, yeah, there was 300 homeless people trying to sleep here. And then one came in and his dog defecated and his dog pissed and he puked and it fucked it up for everybody else. And I said, you know what, dude? You can't have that. You can't do that, dude. You cannot justify by one person because, like you said, if there's 300 people doing the right thing and there's one person to come on along who fucks it up, there's still 300 people doing it, right?
Besides, up in the hills of Scotts Valley in the mansions, they're shitting on the floors in some cases, too. I mean,
shocking.
Things going down everywhere.
There's a lot of shit going down, that's for sure.
Seattle, dude.
So anyway, last night, what happened? Any tickets?
No, peaceful night.
But Lee, you had some interesting news about new signage being posted at the library.
I don't know who Lee is.
Those other guys said it. Anybody know who...
Vamp will openly speak on that.
Openly, Vamp.
They put 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. signs up for library hours and outside of the library. But they didn't put one on this side because I don't know if they're willing to infringe on our First Amendment right.
Oh, we'll see about that.
We will see.
When did these signs go up?
Roughly around noon, 1 o'clock.
Well, I'll just have to go investigate these questionable signs. Thank you.
Good.
But you say last night here at Peace Camp 2010 there were no tickets. Any police adventures? Any?
Not that I seen stop. I seen some drive-bys.
But how many people would you suspect were actually sleeping?
There were a couple out here, a couple on the sides of the buildings.
Anybody with a sign that said, end the sleeping ban or
oh,
something?
Oh, there was a bunch of signage.
Excellent. So
that's how it is up in Seattle.
The struggle continues. Thank you.
The struggle will go on.
On and on and on. I'm walking through the no smoking square area next to the front of the main library. And library hours, of course, have been reduced because of budget cuts, and I see no one sitting in front of the library. And looking for signs here that might indicate, as well as the closed sign, new restrictions on the presence of poor people in public spaces, or of course anybody in public spaces. Walking around the library to take a peek. Oh, yes, there's a sign posted here. Library grounds hours of operation, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., no trespassing after hours. And again, I'd be surprised if these library hours were devised after consultation with the Parks and Rec Commission, as is required, or at least such is the wording of the municipal code. I think it's 13 point something that has created the ultimate powers of, or expanded the powers of Parks and Rec Czarina Danette Shoemaker. We have at least three sleepers here, one pooch, and about seven people awake. The usual 8:15 meeting coming up, including one bongo drum and one wheelchair. So, Scum, you're telling me, and lest people be thinking that I'm maligning you, your name is, in fact?
Francis Martinez.
Ah, well, I'll call
it's
you that.
It's my real name, yeah, but I go by Scum.
All right, Scum, or Francis, is the case for you, your choice. You say you slept for the last three nights here in the opening area between the benches and the side of the library from?
Yeah. Right by the library, across from Peace Camp, right across from the City Hall.
And hours where you slept from?
From 1 until 1 in the afternoon.
And no hassles.
No hassles. Well, but see, I talked to a cop by the beach, and I said, hey, man, I've been sleeping at the Pete's camp right next to the city hall. And that cop actually said, yeah, but I heard from the past 2 days that they moved Peace Camp from City Hall to the courthouse.
Oh, so I think he was...
That was a rumor.
Pulling your leg.
No, but see, that was a rumor that was made up, I think.
Grabbed by the police department.
No, a rumor by them. I think they all said they were... Like, I think Gary and them said they were moving it to the courthouse, so they stopped looking here, but they're still putting it up here.
Interesting.
So you got to be smarter than your opponent, right?
So you did get a sitting ticket from... Why did the officer give you a sitting ticket?
I didn't get any tickets.
Oh, they said you got a ticket for sitting at the beach.
I was sitting at the beach, but they only gave my friend a ticket. Like, ever since I've been kicking at the beach, I'd be sitting, I'd be drinking, smoking pot. They don't stop me or give me tickets. Personally, they give my friends tickets.
Now, why do they do that?
I think it's just because all the cops be looking at me and they be kind of giving me a relaxed look on it. Because I'd be joking at the beach. Like, I'd be talking our favorite Rastafari.
You've won their hearts.
I've won their hearts, obviously, because I'd be sitting there with a fake Jamaican accent.
How many tickets did they give out to the people who hadn't won their hearts so far?
The people who they don't like.
I mean, when
probably
you were
since I've been, yeah, probably since I've been kicking at the beach. I've been kicking there for a week. I've been here for 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. Since I've been kicking at the beach, they give every single one of my friends probably like 5 tickets a day. But they don't give me tickets because...
And the tickets they give them are for what?
Sitting, panhandling within 14 feet of a fence, sitting on a bench more than 30 minutes.
It's an hour, actually.
Yeah, but that's what the ticket they
gave. They say 30 minutes.
30 minutes.
Which, of course, is not what the law says.
It is not exactly what the law says. They say smoking, skating, and they even giving them tickets for nothing at all. Nothing at all.
Are they the same officers or are there a variety of officers?
It's a variety of officers. But I had one officer come up to me today and I talked to him about Officer Duarte. And I told you about Duarte the other day, about how he said he was going to, he had a big, deep beast inside of him and he's going to kill me with his teeth. And I talked to an officer today about him and he says, he said that sounds like Duarte. That'd be his approach. And the mayor even said, I doubt anybody.
He questioned us whether you were telling the truth.
Yeah, he was like, I doubt any...
Mike Rotkin, our mayor, can't believe that a police officer...
He cannot believe that, but one other police officer himself said, that sounds like Duarte.
Fair enough. We've been talking with...
Scum.
Thank you, Scum.
And I still be...
That's the generator and the... they are. See, the generator and the lights have been removed and replaced by ordinances that criminalize people from being at the library or in the city council area after 10 o'clock in the council case, after 9 o'clock in the library case.
I heard they had a...
And let me clarify what actually has happened. The generator is a large, noisy, smelly machine that was going pickety, 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 pickety. Pickety pickety all the time, and I'm sorry, Kerberger Chris is getting on my case because I'm not allowing him to say anything.
I just want to be able to say something.
Certainly. I've enabled your mic.
Yes.
They've now put in, actually 2 days ago, and no, I guess it was yesterday, they put in a sign on the front of the library that said library grounds closed 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. As across the street, they put in a sign a couple weeks ago saying City Council Courtyard closed 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. So it looks like they are cooking up trespass forbidden zones for places where homeless people normally hang out. Around the library in many cities is a traditional sort of safe zone for homeless people. Is that the case, Chris?
Well, it was always the case, I feel bad for the guys who have been living there for quite a number of years, and we kind of blew up their spot permanently, it looks like. I mean, I don't know. I think we got to fight these signs. I think you got to... It's so hard, because with Peace Camp 2010, one of the things I wanted not to do was digress from the original point, which was to end the sleeping ban. But they have deployed so many of these crazy things, Robert, against the camp. And what should be considered a legitimate form of civil disobedience and protest, it's hard not to want to fight them, too. The lodging laws, the lights, the signs. I mean, how much did this cost? Who's ordering these things up? Surely they got to be $50 a pop to paint those. So, and what price of that lights for how many days? Did anybody keep track? Certainly almost 2 weeks, I would say.
It was $100 $100 a day, $400 a week, and then there was a discount for a month, I believe, is what somebody found out.
Well, you know, so there you go. And, you know, I question, you know, granted, when we were over at the county courthouse and we had 60 people a night, we were maybe a little bit intimidating. But let's face it, man, last night, what I saw was Gary Johnson, Gary Allen Johnson, who, by the way, I think deserves his own show, you know, just dedicated, you know, for hours to this cat. Because, I mean, he's the only one who did a hunger strike while he was inside. He's been, a stalwart all along the Peace Camp 2010. And there he was in the middle of the cobblestones all by himself in a sleeping bag last night. I have no clue. It'd be great to hear what happened to him. We all kind of left after, left him sitting there. But, you know, and... That seems like a lot of money to spend against a protest that has become quite diminutive at this point. I mean, it's definitely not large and intimidating like it was when we were over at the county building. So, I mean, I don't know. It seems a little ridiculous.
I don't think it really was intimidating. I think you guys were heartening to the general community. Now you just looks like a couple of scruffy bums off to the side sleeping in the gutter.
Well, it's been crushed. I mean, it's been crushed. It's what I begged the President of the United States to stop, to put a halt to. It's, you know, I haven't even bothered to beg Mayor Mike Rockin. He was there at City Hall again when I went to do my noontime check on the place, and parking his Kawasaki in front and not paying his meter again. I have photographs again, time and date stamp. Every time he does that, because he's got a spot out back, okay, he can park in that legally and not pay, but he doesn't want to walk 30 feet around the corner of the building to get to his office, so he parks right in front of his office and doesn't pay his meter. And that just goes up my ass sideways. It's a typical attitude of power to operate with impunity, and it may seem like a small thing. It's just, you know, big deal. He parks his motorcycle there, and he doesn't put a dime in the meter. But it's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a very important issue. How we treat the law and with what respect we have the law is what respect we have a right to ask back from other people. And he's asking an awful lot from this protest, and not you know, he's not living up to that same honesty. So.
What, Mayor Mike Rutkin not living up to honesty? How can you say that about our mayor? You know, let's talk about another one of those fine political figures. Actually, tonight I mentioned Representative Sam Farr is hosting, as we speak, a public town hall meeting. He actually got a lot of flack, according to the Sentinel, down in Monterey, either it was last night or the night before. Tonight's meeting, he may be getting some flack at, too. I just contacted Ed Fry, the activist who has supplied the porta potty, comes by every night, hangs with the gang, does a little bongo drumming, and then earlier today defended Robert Facer, the homeless drummer, sleeper, and sometime he's accused of being a singer, but he says he hasn't sung a note at least the last protest, but they still want to find him guilty of unreasonably disturbing noise. I'm going to play that a bit later.
Are we going to get a heads up on how that all turned out?
Section one of the trial. It hasn't really turned out yet, but we'll get a kind of a preview of what's happening, or we'll get a brief kind of segment. But I want to point out that starting at 6 tonight, going till 8, I think, maybe longer, is a town hall meeting at the First Congregational Church, 900 High Street in Santa Cruz. That's the First Congregational Church, 900 High Street. And that's where activist Ed Fry and a number of Peace Camp 2010 people, including your man, Get It Done Gary, as I call him, is out there raising signs about the sleeping ban and perhaps, you know, getting a little exercise before he crashes out in a heap with an illegal sleeping heap at City Hall tonight, or near City Hall, or under a bush within the vicinity of City Hall, or maybe under some library books. I'm not sure. They're removing all the spots where people, well, it's illegal to sleep anywhere, but they don't want to give you tickets for sleeping.
They're going to cut down the trees next and all the bushes. You wait and see. They're not going to leave any stone unturned.
They don't want to give you tickets for sleeping, because sleeping would mean first of all, it focuses on the issue, which is the right to sleep. Rather to say, oh, these bums are trespassing. See, they could go sleep on the somewhere else, maybe out to 3 miles out of town, or maybe, you know, in some spot we haven't posted with a sign yet. Although we're following them around, posting them with signs wherever they go, you know.
They seem to have plenty of paint, buddy, and plenty of.
Yeah, got a lot of signs,
blanks, man. Yeah.
You know, I actually left a message with the city manager today. His new city manager's name is Martin Bernal. And I requested two things of him. My first, at Ed Fry's request, the guy who's at the 900 High Street Far meeting, trying to find some way to inform the community what you know, what's going on with in the congressional scene and also in the local scene with respect to homeless people. But he, I called Martin Bernal and I said into his answering machine. He doesn't really speak to the public much and doesn't speak to me much anymore, except hello and goodbye. I said to him, you know, one, I'd like to get, I don't want to have to request extensive public records, but I'd like to know what the cost is of these signs that are being posted around the library. Actually, what the origin of them is, who decided them, whether the Parks and Rec met to at least discuss that, even though they're not even allowed to vote on it to confirm or deny it. That was removed from the city code in 2007. By our liberal progressive city council and given over to the Führer of the Parks Department, Danette Shoemaker, or the Tsarina, as I like to call her. And I left that message for Martine. I also requested to know when the meeting to discuss Deputy Police Chief and perhaps actually now Acting Police Chief Kevin Vogel was going to be held, because that apparently is supposed to be a public discussion. There's some scandal over in San Jose, according to the headlines of the Mercury News, about their choosing a police chief without letting the public have any kind of discussion. And actually, the public has never really had much to say about the police chief that they wanted to hear. The really important official, of course, is the city manager, and he got chosen without any public discussion that I remember.
Oh, they had a big news conference, though, on the front steps. That was there for
it. A news conference. Well, that's very nice. Another thing that happened last night was CPVAW, the Creek
That worked out good for you.
Yeah, pretty much. It's the Community for Creative, the Prevention of Violence Against Women. City Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, CCPVAW.
Right.
And that held its meeting from 6 to 9 last night. If you wonder why the City Council lights were on, I think you came by later, Chris. You weren't there probably when those lights were on. We don't have, you know, the Klieg lights anymore. Those were taken away and instead replaced by little signs, sleep here, get a ticket. Not for sleeping, just for being and using the public space, whether you're sleeping, standing, leaning.
Sucking up some internet. People have gone there at all hours of the night to check their email. It's a fantastic spot to pick up.
It was a fantastic spot. Yeah. And perhaps it will be again if we have a sit-in or a lean-in or a walk-in. I don't know, whatever you want to call it.
Well, it goes back to your book, and the one that you lent me and became the Bible of Peace Camp. And it is about street people and the battle for control over this public space. And it's like, again, I said, it's hard to not, I don't want to digress Peace Camp 2010 from its original cause, but it's really hard not to when when you're trying to do a protest in this public space, a relatively benign and pretty innocent, if you will, of any harm protest, surely that should be an allowable thing. And I think, you know, the county agreed with us for 30 days, and they allowed it to go on even when it was really quite a bit more of a nuisance for them than we are being for the city. So. And yet they felt like it was a valid enough expression of free speech to leave it unmolested for 30 solid days. And that's the only reason. We both know that, because at their whim and will, they shut it down like that. So.
Well, an interesting question would be where can the tattered remnants of Peace Camp 2010 go next?
The police station. Why not save them the walk?
Station,
you know, save them the drive. Save the city a little bit of money.
Right.
They got nice bright lights there.
Have to take you to the jail, though. So in a way, why not go directly to jail? Why not simply knock on the door and demand to be let in?
I believe several peace campers did that during the county stint and were turned away. One of them forcefully.
No room at the end.
One of them was actually hurled from, as I understand, the lobby of the jail. And,
really?
And threatened with arrest should he try to come back. We'll jail you if you come back again. Yeah, trying to get into jail. That's what it was. Rather bizarre scene, actually, and I decided not to journalize it because it was just a little too surreal.
Well, I called Ed Fry over at the far shindig at 900 High Street. For those of you still going on, you want to talk to our congressional representative and actually get some real action against the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq instead of just, you know, Obama, Obama, we love you, Obama, Obama, we'll wait forever, that sort of thing. You can go there and raise your voices, because there's a lot of malcontent, there's a lot of discontent, I should say, against Representative Farr, much of it on the right. But the right and the left both have in common an understanding that the leaders of this country are the ripoff artists, and they are not. They're, you know, the huge complex, whether you want to call it corporate military industrial or government military industrial or whatever you want to say. The country has become an imperial power. Well, it has been for 100 years at least, of course, and actually for 100 before that, if you want to look back at the Louisiana Purchase and other activities, purchase my ass. In any case, FAR is meeting there at 900 High Street. You can still go and, you know, rant your piece at him and maybe organize, I'd say more productive to organize some of the people who are discontented there. Do a little marching around town around civil rights issues and... maybe, you know, grab, you know, maybe occupy a few banks and maybe take over a few buildings so that they're actually, these empty buildings at night have some place for people, provide opportunities for people to sleep. Of course, I'm sitting here in the comfort of my station. I don't have a problem sleeping outside. And what am I doing? Urging other people to go. One of the Peace Camp 2010 hangers-on last night told me that I was an opportunist, you know, that I was...
We're all opportunists. The thing about that is... That's an unfair accusation on the face of it. Everybody that is a part of Peace Camp 2010 that has been from the beginning has pulled their way. And if they hadn't, they would have been, you know, scandalized and ostracized from the group a long time ago. This was a difficult protest. I do believe it's coming to its end.
And a lot of conflicts come up between folks because who feel frustrated, and it's easy to take it out on other people. We've had our domestic violence squabbles there. We've had our problems with people, you know, getting angry at each other, and it's hard, you know, as tempers fray. But I notice still an amazing persistence in the central core group.
Resilience.
Yeah, they keep coming back every night. And tonight at 8:15, if you want to see what Peace Camp looks like for yourself, go down there and take a peek.
They may be a bit late. Give them some time to get back from the far
right,
thing.
Right, maybe 8:30, 8:45. I will probably be asleep in some bed somewhere. Many volunteers, of course, can join me, but that's not the story. We do have a phone number, and you don't. There are no requirements, no strings attached to call in. The number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. The number off-air is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And we'll be here for another hour and a half, me and perhaps Curb Hugger Chris. Is possible.
I'm not going anywhere.
He's got his own station. He's got his own direction. He's got his own...
To be fair, we've given plenty of airtime to Bathurst, Sears, and Broadsides, and it is a popular show amongst those who are my constituency as opposed to FRSC, mm-hmm. And it's a worldwide audience, a global audience, so it's really, I think, an exciting opportunity not just for yourself but for a lot of the other personalities here at Free Radio Santa Cruz to sort of branch out and get some exposure on a nationwide basis.
I have many criticisms of my show, which I won't even go into at the time. But
it's awesome. I don't care. Who cares what they say about you as long as they spell your name right and get the URL correct?
Well, we've lost our main publicity agent. But I still notice, for example, I put a comment online about last week's very weak Santa Cruz Weekly story about Peace Camp 2010. Actually, it was sort of a hit piece on Ed Fry. Sort of disguised as a laughing, here's this quixotic crusader. What a weirdo. Look at him go. And I wrote a piece which sort of denounced the way this went down, and it was okay except for a few tangled sentences in an online comment. And I see we have a caller calling in. And that's in this week's Weekly. They apparently decided they wanted to, print that.
You turned the dreaded ringer on. It was so pleasant without it.
Here comes the ringer, and here comes another caller. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Chris and Robert. You're the first on-air caller to this show. Congratulations.
Hey.
Hello?
You hear me okay?
There we go. I can hear you. What's up?
Okay. So are you taking calls or what?
Well, yes, sir. We are taking calls.
Okay. So I'm online then.
You are online. Make sure you turn down your radio, otherwise you'll be very confused.
I don't have the radio on.
Good. Well, then, go ahead. What can I do for you? Questions, comments? What are your thoughts?
I just want to maybe opinion, a comment, I guess. Opinion.
Yep.
Sure. Go ahead and give your opinion. Roll with it, bro.
You're ready or what?
Yeah, you're on the air. Roll with it. What do you got
to
say?
I've been listening to you guys for a while now. I'm at the homeless situations in the area, and I have an idea, you know. I think I had this idea for a long time. But it's funny, but because sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, because it has to do with the quality of people, you know. And you guys sound really fair and sincere to help other humans who are in disgrace. But, you know, it's amazing what people can do if they unite to do something positive. In this case, all they need in a capitalist society is have money, you know. And if you got 100,000 people, they all share together into a union kind of a stuff, you know. And I hate to say the word union, because union is so commercialized.
Well, you might as well go ahead and say, because it's been proposed actually just the other night. I think it was on your show, Robert, that Elise proposed the very same thing, a sort of people's union. In fact, I think she even had a name for it, PUG or something, People's Union for Growth. Or
well, the problem again is the word. You have to use the right word. You know, I don't think union will work. I'm talking about unity kind of a thing. And so you know, the first thing they do is they buy a farm, you know, out in Oregon, and all of a sudden, you know, in 10 years, everybody will be very wealthy, you know, and having lots of...
So let me understand you, Carl. You're suggesting that a bunch of people get together, buy some property, make some money, and then come back and do it again with another group, maybe?
Correct. You keep going.
Right. Well, you know, I hear you, and I think that there are a number of different...
Land's expensive, though.
Another different avenues. You supply the money, we'll supply the people. How's that?
Yeah, there we go. That's the deal.
You see, when they eat you right out, it doesn't work that way, you know?
I mean, right now we got our laws that criminalize people in Santa Cruz. So what are we going to do here? You think people should just leave Santa Cruz? Is that the idea?
Well, if you want to buy here, you can buy here, but it's a lot more expensive.
Well, why should people have to buy the right to be able to sleep at night or buy the right to be able to use public property? I mean, it seems to me that, you know, we have people that are who are being divested of their homes. The foreclosure plague is deepening. You know, how are you going to get money in the middle of a depressing economy? I mean, a depressed economy. I don't think it's a realistic proposal at the moment, you know.
To be very realistic, because I tell you, I totally 100% agree with you.
Okay.
When you realize that we spend $1 trillion in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right.
High income for the big corporations for making bulletproof.
Right, but how do we get that money and then dump it into something decent? You see, it's not very well to say, oh, they spend a lot of money in Iraq, and I do all the time, you know. But what are we going to do? Are we going to go into the banks and say, stick them up, give us the money for the poor people, fuck you, Mr. Military Man, and are we going to start selling off the B-1 bombers? Are, you know, we going to go over to Iraq and dismantle the 47 bases that are over there? I mean, how are we going to do this?
Well, very simple, you know. I tell you, there's a parable, actually it's not a parable in the Bible, where Jesus was asked, you know, that they needed to pay taxes. He said, show me a coin. And they show a coin that has Caesar stamped on the coin. He said, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and give to God. To God. A lot of people misunderstand that.
Well, I don't think anything belongs to Obama at all particularly, and I think that sucks. But, I mean,
right.
I don't know.
In a very serious note, what I'm trying to say is,
yeah.
Be creative. I mean, don't look at yourself into the ideas of how are we going to get it. I mean, you never know. You know,
well, I agree with you, and I would encourage other callers to call in with creative ideas. And I'm kind of fluffing you off here, man. But I'm going to thank you for calling and call again if you want. If you got some more creative ideas, do so.
Yeah, sure. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Yeah. So you know, I mean, I'm. People start raising the Bible, and I got to admit, I'm no Bible thumper, no Bible fan. I call it the Hooli Bibble when they talk about that. But I mean,
I've had about enough Jeff Beck for one day. He's been in the news for the last couple of days.
But I do, you know, I do understand that there are some aspects to religion all over the world that have to do with the rights of poor people. And often, however, I'm afraid I tend to believe that, along with old Karl Marx, that religion is the opiate of the people.
Yes,
not always. It can be inspirational too. It can be a form of unifying and a community linking, and you know, getting to deeper spiritual truths and standing up against unjust authority. I'm not denying any of that. That's also possible. So
you sound dubious.
But I'm, you know, I know some of the people I've been arrested with have been religious people in a number of demonstrations and occasions. Some of the people who are, you know, anti-choice fanatics have been the people most concerned with the rights of homeless people. It's very, very strange the bag you get into in this situation. Anyway, you feel free to call in again. Phone lines are open, 423-4833. I'm going to return to Peace Camp 2010 last night so we can pick up on a few more voices from that little neck of the woods.
They don't have much of a voice. We're about all they got.
Yeah, well, let's play it then.
Wallace for us being over here on the library side.
That's correct. They've, at least I saw that's the sign that's out front now. I questioned its validity.
That's what I thought.
But I noticed where. I better check this out here. I've been told they're messing with a member of the peace camp. I better check this out. You've just been visited by a police officer?
No. A guard.
What did he have to say to you?
He said, don't fall asleep at the park.
Well, that naturally, sleep is a crime in Santa Cruz. You should know that by now.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
However, it's only a sleeping ticket, or I guess it might be a trespass ticket after 10. But you have an hour and 15 minutes until that happens.
Yeah, that's a little ways away.
So you can hang out here. And he told you to move now?
No, he was just giving me a heads up.
Oh, he's trying to be a nice guy.
Yes.
Well, I see.
The he I'm talking about is the security guard who still roams the city hall grounds. And that was Todd, a longtime stalwart of the Peace Camp 2010, who apparently was warned on the grass, but not, or maybe just given a heads up, as he puts it. People are kind of taking to sleeping in strange spots, and I'm not going to reveal their secrets, but Peace Camp people are kind of trying to have a visible presence to an extent and then kind of disappear so as to some extent, avoid citations. Because the problem, I mean, there are some who say, well, why not take tickets, go to jail, and then, you know, keep fighting from jail. And that can be done. You know, it's been done by some. And indeed, there's also the issue of if you just get sleeping ban infractions, you're just going to be... if you just get sleeping ban infractions, that's not a jailing offense unless after 2 or 3 months you don't deal with them. And that hasn't happened yet. And if you get the other kind of sleeping infraction, which is, there are two other kinds. One is a camping infraction, which does become a misdemeanor. That, and the other one, which is the penal code of the lodging law, 647E.
The old Jim Crow law.
Which you have gotten a citation for, I believe.
I've gotten two citations and one arrest.
You actually have three court dates pending on that?
I would assume so, yeah.
That's misdemeanor trials, which actually does provide both a forum and a real kick in the ass for the city, because once you get to court, there is a really heavy chance that a jury of 12 people, you'll find at least one juror that will look at the defense of necessity and say, not guilty. That's a defense that says, I did it, I violated the lodging law, I fell asleep after 11, I camped with the intention of remaining overnight because I had no place to go. And the juror says, so fucking what? There's no shelter. It's been shown that there's no shelter on all the summer nights, every night, until November 15th, when maybe there'll be shelter for 100 people at the Armory.
Well, and then there's, not to be a lawyer about it, but there's also my defense that on all three occasions, I was at a publicly advertised protest and was in my sleeping bag, that being my crime or that being their evidence of lodging me. It would be my evidence that it was a chilly night and I was trying to stay warm at the protest. They never once woke me up to cite me or to arrest me. Never.
Mm-hmm.
They always came upon me. In fact, when they came upon me, I had a camera in all instances, all three times. When they came upon me, I had a camera in one hand and a video
camera. And there are all kinds
of
that's a defense that can be used. There are many defenses that can be used. So in theory, if people wanted to, and if they were careful to avoid other violations, they could continue this protest. But it does require a degree of organization and commitment and energy, which one can only sustain, I think, for a certain a while. Now, you are an example of this. For 40 days, you were hanging there with the, not only just hanging with the peace camp, you were calling the media. You were running around, moving the camp here and moving it there. You were policing the camp policing isn't the right word. You were
keeping the energy of something like that high. And one of the reasons why I ponied up to that was because we were riding a wave. It was definitely, when I came upon it 3 or 4 days into it, it was on its way up.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw an opportunity that I was perforce to just give 100% to, and I'm glad that we
right,
did.
But
we took
even your energy, and I mean, particularly people who are outside who don't have financial resources, and you don't, as far as I know, you know, and even those who unless there's a lot of connection with a growing number of homeless people who come to this, and that was, I guess, the hope for a while. But people did come to it. It did grow, but the trouble is
it grew when we offered safety. It grew during that 30-day window when we had confounded two governments and two police agencies. Right, and we were able to offer a modicum of safety, And that was an interesting experiment. That was an interesting chance to not only protest the problem, but to expose a possible solution. You know, had we had the cooperation of the governments and the police agencies in that solution, it would have worked.
Yeah, well, I think that's almost never likely unless there's some really incredible crisis, and that would be because of the weight of numbers there would have to be, or maybe some incredible new religious or social movement that rises up and takes up that cause. But what I'm saying also is that it is possible to continue the protest using the necessity defense and carefully avoiding the new hot zones, the new forbidden zones, the new red zones created by the city. One of them now is, of course, City Hall's closed off at night. Another one is you can get a ticket for obstructing the sidewalk. Another one is you can sit on the bench for more than an hour. You can get a ticket for that. Suddenly that's being enforced. Another one is now the library, as of yesterday, was closed off. So they are using a variety of other devices. But if you stay outside this grid, continuing to insist only on getting sleeping tickets, I suppose, although it seems awfully picayune and legalistic, that's one way of continuing it. Another way, of course, is to, I don't know what.
It's tough to give advice. I'm not going to be down there. I'm not going to be doing that.
Me neither, except as a supporter,
sure. And as a journalist, it's awfully interesting to see the persistence of everyone. I think it's up to them. I think it's up to the folks that are down there. I think they're going to need some help, and they're going to need some people. They're going to need to bring some people into it, and they're going to need to realize the responsibility that was on the shoulders of others is now going to be on their shoulders. They got to become the media person. They got to get online and learn how to use the Twitter. They got to get online and learn how to use the YouTube. And it has to be their initiative. I mean, it's not like those of us who know how to do this stuff haven't made ourselves perfectly available to all of the folks down there. So we're there if they need to tap us for the knowledge of how to do that. But it's them that needs to step up and take those roles and realize it is a full-time job, and you ain't going to get paid shit, and you ain't going to get no respect for it, and you ain't going to get any kudos or pats on the back for it. In fact, you're going to get shit on non-fucking-stop.
Plus, you aren't going to get fed well. You're not going to get enough sleep.
Sure, none of that. And yet, you're still going to have to do it with the same hot and zest as if you were a rock star. And you got to be a rock star to a certain degree. In your own mind, one of the ways I got through it, especially the spokesman part, was really tedious, giving all those interviews. It was endless. And you've got to sort of puff yourself up and bring yourself to that with full steam. So it takes gumption, it takes guts, and it takes dedication. And if those who are down there now, rightfully so, because they've got a lot on their own plate. Survival is tough on the streets. If they don't have that to give, then they don't. It's that simple, and it won't go any further. I'm of the personal opinion, and I'm. You think you take shit down at Peace Camp 2010? I take big shit now because
you walked away, big boy.
Well, it's not only that. I'm of the personal opinion that I'd be willing to call it at 60-day mark if I were still there on the 4th, the 5th. We're going to do the celebratory show on Sunday. I would go ahead and call it a game for this round and pull the portage on. And I think that's the one thing that's going to have to happen is that Ed will have to be convinced to stop bringing the shitter, and then it can fold. I think it should. We've got another phase now. We've got these court cases, and we got endless protests to hold at the county building now because of these court cases. Some of them may be tandem. We may be there for days in a row camping out for some of these court cases. But, you know, I think that's the next phase, and we also need to see what sort of an impact we can have in the November elections. We've actually gotten some brownie points with guys like Steve Pleich.
That's the only guy, unfortunately.
Well, there's another that I'm working on. I'll have some more news about it now.
What, Ron Pomerantz?
The one that People Power recently endorsed.
Hillary Bryant? No.
I believe there's one that People Power has
Ron Pomerantz is the one recently endorsed by People Power.
And, you know, I'd like to meet him and talk to him some more. So,
yeah, well, you know, watch out. They're pretty slimy, pretty slippery.
They are. I mean, I've been a politician myself.
Steve Pletch accepted. I believe him. He shows up.
Yeah, the slime will come out of his pores, too. I mean, I ran for office, and the slime comes right out of your pores the minute you sign the paperwork. I mean, it's just it's the nature of the beast. It's the nature of the game. And for myself, as a person who cannot stand to lose, you know, that became the focus for me. And I don't know about other politicians, but for me it was a driving need to destroy this opponent who I'd been placed against. You know what I mean? And really for no other reason other than I'd been put in a contest with him.
Yeah, yeah. You macho type A guy. All right, let's get back to Peace Camp 2010 yesterday. And again, the new tactic by the city posted signs destroying the rights of people to be in public spaces around the library at night, even though there's been no showing of any crime problems.
We should just briefly describe, too, what this area is there's these wonderful, beautiful wooden benches that sit on both corners, entire catty corner, and then they're lined along the entire front wall. It's gardened, it's landscaped, it's very beautiful, it's a very pleasant place to sit. And as I said, not just to sleep or to camp there, which was traditional right up until we came along, but to go there to check your email. You'll oftentimes, when you're sitting there in the evening, see people pop in and out with their laptops catching a quick Wi-Fi signal. It's a terrible shame that this is being stripped, not just from a protest, but from all of the public.
Thanks. That's a good description.
I mean, it's public space being shut down, and it's important to realize that homeless people aren't the only ones using this public space.
Sure, just like they shut down the drum circle area next to the Soquel Bridge, just like they shut down the City Hall courtyard at night.
But they didn't just shut down the drum circle at Soquel Bridge. They cut down the trees to make sure they didn't come back. I mean, that's ludicrous. What are they going to deforest their own city?
And along the levee, they've been doing something similar.
For years, and killing snowy plover, nesting grounds, all kinds of endangered species that live down there. I know, because I live down there, and I feed these birds. So, and now they're, afterwards, it's sad to see the raccoons and all the critters that were walking around going, what the fuck?
That was another issue. You know. The Poganip Master Trail hearing came up last night, and there again, the idea is to put a sort of a road through the Poganip that... the police can use to go after the heroin camps and the homeless and the criminals and the Poganip and that sort of thing, and I suppose also to provide some sort of, I think it's an eastern access route, maybe, I'm not sure, but that was a big issue 20 years ago that was defeated by environmentalists. Now, often the environmentalists seem to be kind of dipping their doo-doo in with the Take Back Santa Cruzans, that the environment they care about is not the human environment of poor people, but simply...
You need to go down there in the river bottom. You need to be down there when those land movers are scraping the estuary to the sand, okay? And you need to tell me, and I want Mike Rockin, I want to stand right there and have him look me in the eye and tell me I am an environmentalist. When he is ordering on his watch that to take place. If I had not been at Peace Camp 2010, I would have done something about them bulldozers. And I'm not going to say any more than that. It's probably fucking crime. But they need to be stopped by any means necessary. Those bulldozers need to be stopped. Earth First needs to be notified of the shit going on. I can't believe Uncle Dennis has not, I hope he speaks out against that, because it's a travesty to see all those critters' environments and homes that have been built up all summer.
Well, actually, Uncle Dennis's show comes on next, so you can actually bring that up with him. Maybe you can get the man on that issue. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to. Kerbugger Chris, Uncle Robert Norris here. Actually, I'm an uncle of one sort or another. And I'm going to play some more from Peace Camp 2010 last night.
They removed, the lighting, so now you can't be reading all the time.
Oh, that's true. That is true.
Of course, they've added signs to make it illegal for you to be at the library, so you're going to have to find new devices. First Alarm has just made an announcement to the group. What did this First Alarm guy say?
He says we have to be out of here, and he's giving a notice before he calls the PD. And they're not going to play any games. They'll just come in and either write us a ticket or arrest us.
They're going to take us. They're going to take us.
They're going to what are they going to do with you once they take you?
I guess concentration camp. I mean...
Concentration camp Earhart, eh? Well...
Sounds like to me.
Well, we're having a meeting here, man. It's interesting that the First Alarm is assisting the police department moving you along. Although, in fact, it's not after 9 o'clock.
And we're talking with a group of people who are actually at the library on that side of the street. And so that's where it's sort of interesting that they're, again, not focusing on City Hall, but they just want to drive people away from that area. Whenever they see a clump of people, whenever they see people protesting, they want to drive them
anywhere
away.
In Santa Cruz. Anywhere they
well,
want
certainly
to
at night from the City Hall environs, for
I
sure.
I don't know. During the day, it seems to be the attitude, too. I mean, whenever more than four or five kids gather on Pacific Avenue, there'll be cops come sniffing around, and they'll find a way. They'll find a way to disperse that crowd, whether it's by sheer intimidation, just hanging out nearby, staring them down. There's an attitude in Santa Cruz that whenever anybody who's not rich and with lodging and with hall rented to assemble is banned. Is banned. Anywhere in the public space, it's frowned upon, it's reacted to with fear and with force.
Not picking up litter here after business hours.
Well, that's not what the sign around the corner says, so I would ignore that.
And what apparently the security guard told, I don't know if it was Scum, as he calls himself, or another one of the folks, he said that you have to be gone by 5 o'clock, which, of course, is a creative new interpretation of the you have to be gone by 9 o'clock sign, which is itself a creative interpretation of the public spaces belong to the community. And if you're not engaging in criminal behavior, you be there as long as you want, doing, you know, whatever you want to do, provided it's legal. Of course, they have now made that occupation illegal, that any kind of use of that area after 9 o'clock illegal.
It says 7 on the weekdays.
It does, but the sign says 9 to 9. Library grounds hours. If you walk around the corner, you'll see it posted on the building. What have you been talking with?
First alarm security guard.
And you are?
I'm Jeff.
He's Jeff. And I don't know who you are. You got all kinds of bongo drums and canteens. What kind of a man are you?
A distressed man.
Indeed. But you look like you're well rested. What, have you been sleeping on the sly?
What I was curious about is why First Alarm was doing public enforcement on public grounds.
It's that, cheaper.
Is that?
I would imagine.
Did you get him on tape?
I did not get him on tape. I came up as he was finishing up. But I did get a second-hand account of what happened. And he apparently told these folks, these three guys, that to move along at after 5 o'clock, no, not 15 minutes, after, he said that they, unless they moved along immediately, the police would come by, they'd get a ticket because it was illegal after 5 o'clock.
After 5 o'clock, because the sign that, I don't know if they just put it up, but the sign over there says 9 to 9.
That's what I noticed.
And I noticed that this is not necessarily private ground, and we were talking about it, and apparently First Alarm may or may not be allowed to do that, to do basically public police work on public ground, and I'm pretty sure that's where we are.
Well, it's true that anybody can write a citizen's arrest citation for an infraction crime that they personally witness. So in theory, police First Alarm, or you or I could do the same.
So he's a corporate person, basically, is what you're saying.
He is an entity unto and of himself. And there you have it, Gary. Some of us are assembled at 9:20, and some of us are assembled having a kind of a small meeting in front of City Hall, which doesn't close down until 10 o'clock. That is to say, the police will not begin warning, citing, and arresting people for using the public space, even though no one's using it. There's no threat to public health or security, and it's simply an attempt to drive away peaceful protesters. Take care of yourself, Jeff. And Gary is the lone sleeper here in front of City Hall ground, carrying out his snoozing mission.
I'm not snoozing. I'm near my readily accessible bedding.
He's not snoozing. He is quite wide awake. I sit corrected.
Yeah, that's right.
And First Alarm had a second coming as they drove by, surveilling the malcontents and ne'er-do-wells in front of the library, sitting on the benches, apparently now illegally, because it's illegal to be there after 9 o'clock, or at least it's illegal to be in front of the library after 9 o'clock. First Alarm, again, driving back and forth. Alarm is circling the block in both directions, though I think they only have one vehicle that's doing that. That's a little truck with the words First Alarm on it.
Addiction.
There's not only a trial for you on this sinister singing case, but there's also the, man is being evicted from his house?
Exactly, his house.
What's
he,
said about it?
He inherited it.
This is attorney Ed Fry talking about a case, actually, he dealt with in court today, but I don't know what the outcome was, because Ed is, boy, he's a busy man. He's setting up a porta-potty at night and hanging with the homeless. Then he comes back and picks up the porta-potty in the morning, and then he goes off to trial. This is the trial I'm talking about right here that you're going to be hearing him describe, the trial of a guy who was ripped off and now is losing his house in a foreclosure. And then later that day he has another trial at 1:30 for defending the right of musicians and political activists to sing political songs downtown. That was me and Robert Facer who were on trial, and that was something I'm going to be talking about shortly.
And his parents, he and his brother both, so he bought out his brother. In order to buy out his brother, he had to take out a pretty hefty loan. Well, as part of his operation, after he bought out his brother, he went through a lot split and moved, actually physically moved his house, had it moved 30 feet to the west or whatever, and split off the other lot and sold it. Well, in the process of selling it, he was screwed by the realtors who sold it to their insider trader who needed a lot to build on. You know, he's a contractor. He's one of the lions of SoCal Hills, you know,
why
all
would that
those
make,
contractors up there.
Why would it make a difference who he sold it to? Why was he screwed?
Well, because he was this guy that they sold it to was a close bosom buddy and a business partner of the broker. Don't you love it?
So now, and again, I'm trying to put the pieces
one
together.
One part of the brokerage. And they didn't tell the other part of the brokerage, the woman who represented, for the same company, represented my client. She didn't tell him that the buyer was a business partner of the other broker.
And the significance,
because she didn't know.
And the significance is, again,
it was they defrauded him. They rushed him into a sale for which he could have gotten more money.
I see. Okay.
And we took that. We sued over that.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to jury trial over that.
Right.
And the other side had a lawyer who was so highly paid and supported by the insurance company that they were able to order all these depositions, all this special discovery work. They outspent us 10-1.
And so they convinced the jury.
And they were able to convince the judge, who himself had been a insurance defense lawyer all of his professional career prior to assuming the bench. He said, oh, now, you can sue them for, if you think that you can get an appraiser in here and convince a jury that you should have gotten $50,000 more than you got, that's fine. But we're not going to allow you to plead the fact that you are losing your home as a result of a foreclosure, which came about as a result of you not getting enough money when you sold that lot. You see what I mean? He didn't have enough to last until his Social Security payments started when he turned 62, but that was only this year. So he needed a bridge of money that he could deposit in the bank and live on until his Social Security started, because he was not able to work. He was unemployable. So the judge did not allow us to...
Name of the judge?
Folkman.
Ah, Judge Timothy Folkman.
Timothy Folkman.
Yes. He's the one who ruled against
he's
Anna and Miguel. He's a Department 4 judge.
Anna Miguel and, yeah. Anna and Miguel.
Anna, yeah, Lito and Anna Banana got, screwed by old Timothy Folkman.
Folkman.
Or Folkman, if you
will. Well, German. Folkman.
Folkman.
Double.
Double. So, you were aced out, but you weren't even allowed a jury trial?
And we got a jury trial, but we were not allowed to show to the jury that the house was being foreclosed against, that he was losing his house as a result of their fraud.
So, in other words, they didn't want the uncomfortable fact to come up. The F word was not allowed in court.
Right. So he forever foreclosed the possibility of my client getting damages for this. So we're screwed.
Foreclosed on the foreclosure disclosure.
That's right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So tomorrow you go to court.
He gets evicted officially in a judgment which will be signed immediately by the judge. And within 6 days, the sheriffs are going to show up at his door over on the east side in the Banana Belt by Branson 40 on a little side street. Lovely little neighborhood, you know, it's... And he's 62 years it's been in the family, and now it's kaput.
Now it's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
It can't happen here. And remember, it can't happen to you folks, for all you listeners. Don't worry about this kind of problem. Leave it up to the experts. Judge Volkman will defend your rights in these matters.
You bet. Oh, my.
Is he wanting people to come and do the Communist Party thing of the 30s people would be evicted and the Communist Party people would come and take all the furniture that was on the sidewalk and go put it back in the house again?
Well, we should do that. I mean, we could, as a camp, a peace camp, decide that we're going to go over to his house and stand there and bar the sheriff from entering his property, because he's determined to stay there himself.
Uh-huh.
He's another Gary Johnson, except he's protecting his home, his ancestral home.
Interesting. I know that we're
kind of worried about what that form that protection might take.
I see. You think he might be armed and...
Well, I'm not going to say or speculate, but, you know, anything's possible.
Once you talk about people with guns, you can count me out. But, if, you know, if it's a peaceful thing, I'll go hang out.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'd have
some protest signs and some media would be a good idea. I mean,
if you want to come to the trial tomorrow, it's 9 a.m.
All right.
Department 5 is where they're going to, judge is going to say, go to Department 7, or go to Department 2. No, but he's the one, the presiding judge, Armquist, or Judge Armquist.
Ah, Judge Armquist, well put, yes. I like it.
Don't answer me.
Well, all right, well, so we will hopefully, again, the name of this poor victim is...
Well, let me see. Let me think. I have so much trouble with names.
You're examining your little finger to try to remember. You remind me of me sometimes, Ed. Well, here's a local...
William Bowen.
Now, here's a local police officer just riding by and giving us its the high sign.
Was he impressed by my immediately accessible bed?
I think
he didn't shine his searchlight on.
No.
But it's got a light on it. That's why I put it here.
Uh-huh.
And we still have a security guard patrolling City Hall, so that should reassure us that all really is well over here.
And we'll try to get an update on what happened with that foreclosure episode today. Ed's seems to be running from one courtroom to one protest to one public meeting to the next. And he's also, he himself, I believe, has had to move out of his own lodgings. And, there's a guy who's just putting in a lot of energy, doing a lot of things. Peace Camp 2010, he should be back there tonight, maybe around 8:30, in case people want to check in with him. Again, every night he brings the porta-potty for people to use, the only 24-hour bathroom in Santa Cruz.
The only public restroom between midnight and 6, I think we've determined.
I think so. That's my understanding. I guess you can talk your way into Santa Cruz Diner or Denny's, you know.
If you dress properly.
If you don't have your backpack with you.
Exactly.
If you're buying two cups of coffee or a cup of coffee for half an hour or whatever the rule is of the moment. Yeah. Let's hear a little more.
And, of course, there's one lone figure. Lee's walking up and down, puffing a cigarette. But on the sidewalk, he's a move from the bench where he was previously sitting. Perhaps out of apprehension for the new 9-to-9 closing sign that was posted today at the library, I understand.
Please guard my...
Actually, there is still one woman and her dog sleeping on the other side of the street. What is now an illegal spot, both for sleeping and for being. So we have a former peace camper, curb hugger, Chris. And there are a couple people on the other side of the street. But Chris, you're now a radio station man, and you're going to do a story on Gary. You're saying?
Yeah, I think he's would make an excellent story if he would cooperate. He's got quite a story to tell, and he really is the last man standing. I suspect that you'll...
Last man lying. And that's no lie.
That's true. He corrected us, but sorry you caught me while meeting.
Munching away here. So you're we won't inquire further about your radio station, but you are still broadcasting, still working mainly out of the coffee roasting company.
We are still on the air.
And still generally on the air.
We are on the air 24/7, and all the live stuff being managed out of the coffee, mostly out of the coffee roaster. But I came down here today. I did some work down here at Peace Camp, and then at the library. We got a big show coming up Sunday that I was working on where we're going to be on the air from, I think it's 10 a.m. till 7 p.m. We're going to do 6 hours of Bathrobe Spears broadside.
Silly boy.
Yeah, and we're going to rebroadcast a couple other shows, the Watay Group show, and then another show that I did down here, all to sort of celebrate the 60th day, 2-month anniversary, if you will, of Peace Camp 2010. So we thought we'd broadcast all day, perhaps from down here if I get the speakers back.
Hopefully so. Well, and again, the station that people should tune into is
ucir.limewebs.com.
One more time.
ucir.limewebs.com.
Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
That crunching sound you hear is the sound of my tape recorder on inadvertently as I walk around for the next hour using up tape time, but also making interesting surreptitious recordings that I wasn't even aware of. So you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I got an hour more to go with the show, and I'm going to start reviewing a few things. I actually was thinking of playing a little anti-war radio here, but there's an interesting website.
The war's over. Obama said so.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He's, well, there is, of course, numerous conflicts are happening around the globe with the U.S. dipping its rifle into the various conflicts. I actually got a couple of phone calls from Red, who is making her way to the FAR farce, if you will. I'm sorry, the FAR town meeting. I always regard these town meetings as essentially a lot of horse shit, although people do get together and they talk about, they try to raise issues. But the problem is they're talking to a guy at the apex of the power pyramid who doesn't really give a shit. Or if he did give a shit, there's not much he would do unless he wanted to risk
a great deal. If he gave a shit, he wouldn't even be holding the town hall meeting. I mean, that's the key thing you need to understand. It's always to his advantage. As a former politician, I'll tell you, you don't do anything that you can't eventually spin, or you hope to spin at least, to your advantage.
So. Yeah, it's silly. Particularly if your real objective is to change policy, not to win office. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I've always... People say, why don't you run for office? And I say, you know, my stock response is I run from the office, I run from the mayor, I run for the mayor. But there are advantages to going to these forums insofar as if you can use them as a podium to rally on certain issues. But that's, you know, that can only be done so far, and a lot of these forums are sort of dead from the neck up to start with. I don't know. I had that feeling as I talked to the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women last night. They were having a forum. You may remember on the radio, Chris, we had in the radio Jillian Greenside, who talked about... They're up. Jillian Greenside talked about how the Santa Cruz Police Department has failed miserably to deal with rape investigations compared with numerous other communities our size. And Kevin Vogel, who's slated to be the next police chief, is one of the longtime reps who's said nothing about that. He's, you know, I've got a number of concerns with Vogel, but it's interesting. There was an article in the Sentinel that actually gave some significant coverage to Vogel's, criticizing Vogel's role in the DIY 2005 political surveillance of the last night parade, which is, although, you know, it's interesting how far we've gone. In 2005 and 2006, we were investigating these issues, or there was some pressure to investigate. In 2010, the people who walk in the parade, the activists who started the parade years ago, are getting ticketed for it. So the whole thing
quite
is...
Quite selectively, right. And so obviously so that it's almost mind-boggling.
But there's no protest. There's little protest from the community. And
what do you think the May Day parade, the May Day incident was about?
Yeah, I don't know if that was about that.
I do.
Well, maybe you've had conversations with the window breakers, and if so...
I want to be crystal clear. I don't think Wes Motes had anything to do in knowledge.
Well, nobody's saying that. Nobody's.
I think that his troubles recent with the city were the inspiration for it.
Oh, I don't know about that. I mean, unless you have specific information.
I don't, but from the window breakers. We're on a news show. We're a talk show. So in my opinion.
In your opinion,
my
yes.
strongly held opinion.
Right. But I mean, anyway, so I don't know. I mean.
Going back to your original point of what how useful these town hall meetings can be, I'd like to know how disruptive they're being down there, because I think that's one way that they can be useful. If you can't participate in them in any legitimate way, then disrupt the fuck out of them.
I agree.
Whatever. I'd like to know how they're doing that, because I think that was partly, at least somewhat, the plan that I picked up at Peace Camp 2010 last night, was to go up there and make a scene, you know, with some signs, try to, you know...
And that's what Peace Camp 2010 may be doing, at least as far as raising issues. Although, the people that are most likely to be effective at that are going to be the people on the right who are upset with FAR for, I don't know, supporting a health care plan or... supporting bailing out the banks, which I actually tend to share a sympathy with right-wingers on those, at least on that issue, not so much on health care, although the health care proposed by Obama was pretty wretched. You were a supporter of that. Have you gotten any benefits from it yet?
No, but to be completely fair, I've been busy this summer, and I haven't really had a chance to go check into
it. Has anyone you heard of gotten any benefits?
No.
Yeah, I haven't heard that yet either. I mean, it may be true, but I just haven't heard it.
I do understand that the legislation that was passed puts me and a number of other homeless single individuals who are at least marginally able to work on the Medicaid rolls. And if I understand that correctly, then we would have full Medicaid and I'd have full access to the same. And Medicaid's nothing to laugh at. My sister has multiple sclerosis, has been on it for 10 years, and is absolutely tickled pink with the... her coverage. So, I mean, it's got to be a step up from standing in line for 6 days at Emmeline, you know, when you're dying. So, something I refuse to do.
Here, here.
I'd rather die.
Let's turn now to. I apologize for feeling a little weary today. I've been.
I'm weary myself.
I came out of a trial that started at 1:30. We actually got a nice. Well, we had a protest at which there was one protester at the county building, and apparently this was after India Joe Schultz, whose restaurant has been open for a month and who was a sometime supporter of Peace Camp 2010. He provided, I guess it was sherbet or sorbet or some such thing. We have a caller. Let's see who's calling in, shall we? Hey there, caller. You're talking to Chris and Robert.
Hey.
Drum circle Dave.
Hey. We got Mike Rockton. He's running first in a parking spot where he doesn't have to put money in, but he can park his bike there
forever.
Give him a ticket. No tow truck comes. Get him out of there. Mike Rockton, you are the man of the hour.
Well, I know, Drum Circle Dave, you gave me a report by phone earlier about the Wednesday Drum Circle, which has retreated to a little spot, behind behind University Copy on the
path. We're trying to get out of the way of the cop cars as he's Mario Andretti-ing down the levee, man. I mean, there's crippled people trying to get out of the way. We got wheelchairs. We got all kinds of stuff in the way, and here comes this new cop. On a new beat, I don't know his name, I just know he don't know nothing about the street, except maybe that he needs to take his shoes off and smell his own feet, because, man, I'm tired of them driving down there, man, and trying to smell our feet.
Mm.
I need to get off the levee, man, those cop cars, man. There's people there, and bicycles, and drummers, and we respect everyone who either goes down there, and we even respected him one time. But the second time he came by, well, hey, you know, I mean, come on. We know you got your cop car and you got your little
Twinkies
inside.
Drum Circle Dave? Drum Circle Dave. Drum Circle Dave. Hang on a second. Dave.
We are in control.
Dave, we are controlling you. We are controlling you. Dave, we've got a question for you. Has the Drum Circle gotten bigger, stayed the same, gotten smaller as it sort of flees the police into this sort of, it gets seemed to be constricted into a narrower and narrower area. Now it's kind of on the, you know, trying to hold a position on the path behind a bush between Soquel and the other bridge.
They've got their hands on our juggler all the time, and they're trying to, are they still breathing? Wait a minute. Okay, hold on. Oh, waterboard. Okay, here we go. Oh, shit. Oh, and then we got to wave goodbye to the guy.
How long did that, Dave?
He's like a hall usher in
Dave,
a theater
Dave,
of
how
the
long,
wrong world.
Dave, how long did the drum circle go on for yesterday?
Oh, it went on till it got dark and we couldn't see anymore. But anyway,
well, that's good.
You know, these cops that are running down the streets, they might as well hire blind people for policemen. Just what? Totally blind. He's just driving down the levee, man. He don't care what he runs over, man. Just get the fuck out of the way. You know, that kind of cop.
Now,
you know
did,
I mean?
Did you... Did
we
you,
don't need
excuse
this
me.
Kind of
excuse me, Dave. Did you get
town,
the... Did you get... Dave.
You
Dave.
Know,
hello, Dave. Calling all Dave.
You,
oh, Dave.
Can I help
all right,
you
Dave. Your
the,
mic
okay,
is going down, boy.
Uh-oh.
All right. All right, Dave. Dave.
But hey.
Dave. Hey, Dave. No, I can't even get a word. Hey, Dave, are you there? Do you take a breath? Dave.
My car got towed away.
Yeah, we know about that one, Dave. But let me ask you this, Dave. What the drum circle is getting larger, smaller, or staying the same? What's the deal?
Not a mayor. You know what I mean?
Oh, dear. We're not really on the same. We're not on the same track here, Dave. This guy is, he outtalks you, Chris. Dave, I gotta.
Don't ever give him the phone number Dave, on my radio station.
Dave,
man's life. Okay, hey, peace, brother.
No, wait a minute, Dave, before you go.
Oh, yeah, well.
No, Dave, you be quiet, Chris. Now, Dave, what.
Right on, Chris.
Is the group getting larger, smaller, staying pretty much the same?
Oh, yeah, man, we're drumming, man. We're going to be there, man. We're trying to get more drummers down there, but yeah, we're about the same.
How many people
and
at the last circle?
Well and good,
how many people?
You know? I mean, we had ice cream. We had, you know, water, man. We had it, man. We take care of ourselves. We even take care of other people.
Have you got any estimate?
You know,
Dave, have you got any estimate of how many people were at the last drum circle?
Oh, about 20 at least, drummers.
Did
and then
you...
as far as spectators, there's millions of them, wheelchairs, all kinds of things.
Now, let me
cops
ask you.
Cops are trying to run us all over.
Yeah, let me ask
and
you.
And they're not even supposed to be down there.
I'll try to ask you. Let me try
you
to
know,
ask
they
Dave.
They got to be out in the city, man. What's a city cop car doing on a levee?
Take
Come
a
on,
breath,
you guys.
Dave. Take a breath. You could, Dave, let me ask you.
Now,
Dave,
what?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're a man of great enthusiasm. I know that, and I appreciate that.
Oh, man, they're doing the same thing to peace camp, man. I mean, come on, man. Let them do what they want to do, man. They don't have guns. They don't have money. They don't have shit. Leave them alone. No?
I hear you.
God.
I hear you. I appreciate
Who are
that.
These policemen in Santa Cruz? They're just blind.
Here, here.
Hey, okay. Hey, Rob. You guys have a good one.
You too, Dave. Bye, bye. I think Dave is. Dave has a certain. You know,
he's always a blast of fresh air. Just when the show gets really, really tight and heavy, he'll call in and.
Well, I think you've helped me grow more tolerant of folks, Chris, in some extent. But, you know, again, I want to remind you all that you do have an opportunity to call in. That call-in number is 427-3772.
I'm not giving out my studio number.
And
he's
not giving his out, but I do. And I also can encourage you to call the off-air number of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And that, of course, is 423-HUFF, 423-HUF. I want to apologize to folks who regularly go to the HUF website, huffsantacruz.org, because I have not been putting up the descriptions of shows, but I'm starting to do that again. So if you want to actually look and see, for example, the Rotkin show that you, Chris, are going to be playing on Sunday, replaying, I should say, I've actually put up the description of that show, so if people want to actually get to it more directly, they can, or they can get to it and they can know where it is. And that hopefully will be taken care of in terms of getting some of that back stuff done. I'm going to turn now to, as I said before, the trial of the Sinister Sidewalk Citation Group, which I was,
I like Sing Song 4. I think that makes
the Sing Song 4.
Sing Sing?
It's the Sing Song 4.
Yeah,
very good.
Well, Sing Sing might be where you guys end up.
Sing
but.
Sing, yeah, we get Sing Sing for the Sing Song. Well, this, of course, has been going on since January 6th back at the Bookshop Coonerty, or Bookshop Santa Cruz, as some call it, where we were singing Downtown, when you're alone and rents are making you homeless. Hey, that's interrupting my song there. In any case, that's when it began, but we'll learn more
as soon as this
caller has got his or her own point of view. Hi there, caller.
Heckless Vito.
Hey there. How you doing, caller? Hello.
Yeah, hi. I'm just calling before you get into your next segment there.
Okay.
Is a free Radio Santa Cruz back on the air?
It is indeed, believe it or not.
Great to hear it. Glad to hear it.
And everybody else is hearing you saying it's great to hear it, so I'm glad you called in to tell us.
Yeah, I was a little bit concerned about it. I listened on the internet from New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Thank you for calling in. I
called a few while back.
I think we talked about, if you're the same guy, we talked about some of the things that are happening in New Jersey, but...
Yeah. I just want to say again. I mean, not to dwell too much on the greatness of your show, but I really your program.
Dwell on it.
It's a real people's history. It really is. It's absolutely entertaining. Informative,
awesome,
and I'm just glad that you and your
what do you think
the
what
scope
do you think
of your show is really sorry.
What do you think of his co-host?
Chris is fishing for compliments.
Oh, Chris! you gave a soliloquy outside of the courtroom. Robert taped it when he was for trial for something. I lose track of the trials here. But your soliloquy on Just Leave Us Alone is what I call it. It was really moving.
Well, thank
really
you.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate your poetic contribution.
Well, it's a civil rights battle. I mean, it's a battle
yeah.
no different than And that's not to belittle any of the great civil rights battles of our times, but no less than any other.
It's serious.
And it's
it's killing people.
It's killing people. First and foremost, the sleeping ban. What we saw, and we saw it with our own eyes. This was the most amazing part of Peace Camp 2010 to me, was being able to see with my own eyes the people that this law affects and how it affects them, and to see them come to us all disheveled and sick because they can't sleep, and spend a week or two at peace camp, and the next thing you know, they're up, they're getting their stuff done, they're getting up to the services that they need to get up to speed, and they're telling me over and over and over again, I feel better than I felt in years. We had one lady, her cardiologist told us we might have saved her life. You know, she
really?
Was next to death, and a disabled lady who spent a long time with us,
and quite possible
we saved her life. So,
The street interviews that I hear, I mean, on free radio, on Robert's show, they definitely, I mean, they're,
real?
You get a sense of, like, you know, how people are affected, you know, and, like, I mean, and threatening people with jail. That's serious stuff.
A 72-year-old woman. They took a 72-year-old woman for sitting in a sleeping bag, and they took her to jail.
Yeah.
And they've actually given her a number of tickets. They took her to jail twice. She's been in jail twice now, or at least once.
Yeah, at least once. We tried desperately to get the sheriffs to arrest her, and they were smarter than the local cops are, and they refused, flat out refused to arrest her. But I just really feel bad when I
hear people getting taken off to jail like that. I mean, especially with the county jails here are so horrific.
Now, we should put in a word to you out here in New Jersey, because I'm one of being up on contemporary events. You're about to get creamed by a hurricane. How do you feel about that?
I'm crossing my fingers here.
You're
going to
get part of it. It's going to get a piece of you, no matter what.
We'll see what happens.
You sound pretty confident. Is there any preparations being done around you, like in your community or anything like that? Did you see anything going on? No.
It's not an emergency situation.
Well, they declared parts of the Jersey coast as a hurricane watch, just so you know.
Parts of the coast, right. Yeah, we'll see if it, you know, wipes out some of those houses down there.
Well, there you go.
See what happens.
Well, thank you for calling me this evening. That's cool, man.
Yeah, all right. I mean, the county jails here in Camden County are just horrific. And the cost of the drug war in Camden County, Camden County, New Jersey, has been absolutely horrific. Really, I mean, like, I hear people who, you know, when I have to hear about a person talking about the babies that they're holding's fathers in jail, you know, it's really, so many young people have gone to jail here, you know, because of selling drugs and the violence from the drug selling but also to see how the state really builds on it and how people profit from it here in Camden County. You can really see it. Yeah, I mean, as Camden City is where the courtrooms and the prisons are, and the city is crumbling. It's an absolute disaster. To see the lawyers walking around downtown, you know, with their fancy suits going in, and at the same time, you know, I mean, well, one thing, I mean, it is there. It's there to see. Like, there's a county jail, and behind those windows are people. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Thanks for bringing it to light there in Santa Cruz.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, if you got reports from the county jail having to do with homeless people, give us a call back.
Some of the stories from the county jail system are pretty scary.
All right, we'll talk to you then about that.
All right, thank you very much. Yep.
Have a good
night.
Thanks.
All right.
Sorry, caller. I'm kind of juggling with different time factors here, plus my own stolid preferences for my little schedule I've already got going. I'm going to play a little bit of the trial we had today in Department 10. This is, again, as I was saying before the last few callers, the real issue here is whether the police department essentially can use or facilitate hecklers' vetoes against political activists and street performers doing political songs on Pacific Avenue. And
in other words, just to I want to take a shot at being perfectly clear because I want people to understand how important this issue is. It basically says the way they're enforcing these laws, if any person, for whatever reason, doesn't care for your freedom of expression, for your particular speech, whether it be in your guys' cases singing a song or whatever, they drumming a drum, playing an instrument, they can lodge a complaint and you'll be shut down and possibly cited. With no question of whether or not it's connected to illegal activity. So,
right. The,
you know, any heckler, in other words, can veto your shit and you get shut down, period, whether it's legal or not.
Yeah, the issue is the unreasonably disturbing noise law, which I've talked about far too much on this particular show. But the issue also really is people protesting outside the bookshop Santa Cruz, singing the homeless downtown song you heard me begin singing a few minutes ago, who offended a guy called Sean Riley, who is on the second floor. I thought he was on the third, but no, not according to his testimony today in court. He's on the second floor of the St. George, which is right above the bookshop Santa Cruz, which is right above the so-called free speech or exempt zone, right next to the Tom Scribner statue, where the Tom Scribner is the guy who played the musical Saw, and he was also a radical activist. And the kiosk that used to be done by, used to be used by the flower lady, or flower ladies, there were a number of women who ran that stand, is now an adjunct to former Mayor Riley, Emily Riley's Good Things to Eat. She's a baker. She's the woman who gave us the latest version of the downtown ordinances almost single-handedly. She and Ed Porter put those together in the summer of 2002, vastly expanding the forbidden zones, creating the move-along law for political displays, performers, and tablers, vastly increasing the panhandling law so that holding up a sign after dark becomes a crime. That's
yeah,
one of her
Sure has, and I've been cited for it, too.
Really? It's one of her accomplishments. So she now has this little kiosk. I haven't talked to her in 7 years because I boycotted her store. We did protests there in 2000. She's a nice person, by the way.
The sign didn't even ask for money. I was asking for food, and I was truly hungry.
Right. And so it's illegal to ask for anything of value after dark in Santa Cruz.
Including leftovers.
Right. Until somebody has the wherewithal and the legal pizzazz to challenge that shit, which I think it can be done, because I think that there's a lot of problems with the panhandling law, which I can discuss in detail if anybody ever wanted to do something about it. You can always call, by the way, the Huff line. If you decide any of these issues particularly interest you and you actually want to work on them, I would love to work on them with you. But somebody has to take the initiative, because not just entertainment you're getting out there as you listen to this show. Hopefully it is, in a way, inspiration if you want to make some changes. But right
interactive
now,
and participatory radio, I like to call it. Get your pen and paper out, and it's activist radio, man.
Sure. 423-HUFF is the number to call if you want to volunteer to do something.
We give out a lot of information in a night.
Peacecamp 2010 is another place to go if you want to help out against the sleeping ban.
Peacecamp2010.blogspot.com.
And I will be coming next week. I'll be inviting you to come next week to the remainder of this trial, which was eventually, it lasted so long. The commissioner who was running it, Kim Basket, or Basket Case, as I call her, no offense, Kim, but you shouldn't be hearing this trial. You should have dismissed it from the beginning, I'm afraid. But you didn't, and therefore you kind of revealed the color of your pajamas, as far as I can see. It's going to be continued next week after, we heard the prosecution case, and Robert Facer, the first defendant, an Amish minister, an older guy who seemed a little befuddled on the stand, and he's just trying to find a place to sleep. He's been criminalized for sleeping. His sleeping convictions have been taken up by Ed Fry on appeal. Now he's been attacked for supposedly singing songs in an unreasonably disturbing noise when he didn't even open his mouth. He had a little drum that he went very gently on. I was there. I saw him. I heard him. He wasn't doing much in the way of any kind of playing. But this, I got to say, much as I'm nice to him in court, it seems to me that I have to say, Sean Riley, I get the impression you're a bigot on this issue, that this is, you're really covering up you know, you're covering up the real motivation you have in this case, which is to eliminate protesters from in front of your, you know, your window. Although I got to say, he doesn't do this consistently, but he has.
Well, no, that's be fair. They don't protest there consistently. It's not like it was in the early 90s and the 80s where we were.
No,
you know,
there was
something going on there almost every day. I mean,
right. No, but I'm saying that in April we went back. His complaint on January 6th so unnerved musicians and Huffsters that they didn't come back for a number of months. In a way, it's kind of sad for me to admit this because I'm now going to hear the crowing of Topics Sentinel cranks and bigots ranting about how pleased at how victorious somebody was in discouraging activists downtown. But, you know, it's like a balloon. You know, you get rid of it one place, squeeze it, it'll show up somewhere else. Peace Camp 2010 has been a more successful activist activity than anything that Huff has done in the last year in terms of numbers
of
people involved.
Let's be fair. Huff was instrumental in producing Peace Camp 2010.
Oh, that's true.
And there's no way to slide around that and to give everybody their due. It was Ed Fry. It was Becky Johnson. It was you, myself coming in a day or two late, but better late than never. All of us pulling together, and I'm a huge supporter of Huff. I mean, I have my criticisms. And,
a supporter, but not a member, Chris?
I prefer. Who knows? Who knows? I may reconsider. I may reconsider that position. I certainly will be attending the next meeting. Do you have any meetings planned, or?
If I hear anybody wants to come to a meeting, I will certainly schedule a meeting. No question about it.
Well, I'll go to one. So, and I think anybody out there, check out the website, which is located again at www. What? Help me.
HuffSantaCruz.org.
Oh, there we go.
So, lest I keep talking and end up with no time left, and I do have some interesting stories on Proposition 19 I want to talk about, too.
It's a fantastic nugget in that girl's hand, man.
Yeah, she's in opposition to Proposition 19, by the way.
Well, it's a beautiful bud, man.
Yes, indeed.
It's
and
a shame
and quite
she
a big,
wants to do
quite a big smile. Well, no, not really. She thinks it's going to make it more difficult for people who are currently using, growing, trying to sell and exchange marijuana. We talked about this a little bit on the air earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about it more as the November election draws closer. But let's look at the trial that began today, actually began way, way many months ago. This is about the seventh time we've come to court on this issue. And all the witnesses for the defense had to be told, you're coming back in a week, because that's when it comes back again, September 9th. 10 o'clock in the morning, Department 10 is when this trial resumes. But let's hear the opening arguments of the prosecution.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Defendants Robert Norse and Robert Facer are charged with creating unreasonably disturbing noise in violation of Santa Cruz Municipal Code Section 9.36.020.
This is a city attorney. I believe his name is Adierno. I don't want to get him wrong, and I was a little confused, but you'll hear me asking his name later.
People will introduce evidence in the way of witness testimony that will demonstrate that on January 6, 2010, in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue, the defendants sang and played musical instruments at such a high volume and for such a prolonged period of time that Sean Riley, a resident of the nearby St. George apartment complex, was unable to fall asleep despite numerous measures taken to buffer the noise entering his apartment. The evidence will further demonstrate that neither the music or the singing, particularly the volume of the music and the singing, was necessary in connection with any otherwise unlawful activity on the part of defendants. Thank you.
Do you wish to reserve your argument, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
I do.
Yes,
sir. All right, so.
People's first witness is Sean Riley.
Now, normally you have two opening statements at the beginning of a trial, the defense and the prosecution. We reserved our statement because we had a particular legal strategy, which I don't think there's any mystery now in exposing it. This is a bizarre ordinance, which I've discussed before, which requires, you have to hear it to, and even then you don't really understand it. It's so, labored and arcane, and ordinary people can't really, I think, have any sense of what this is about. At least, even I mean, I trying to pierce and parse this ordinance is very difficult. It says, no person shall make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any noises or sounds, A, which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to people of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh or so prolonged or unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort to any person, and which are not necessary in connection with an activity which is otherwise lawfully conducted. Any person who violates any section of this chapter and is cited for such a violation, and who within 48 hours after receiving such a citation again violates the same section, is guilty of a misdemeanor. And that means that if you get a ticket, and that what they're doing, what the city police are doing, is they are encouraging the community, residents, merchants, so forth, business people who have their offices on Pacific Avenue, to feel free to call the police department and complain about a musician playing nearby or a political orator. And they will then go, a police officer will then go down and say, you know, you have to quiet down. You have to actually, they don't say quiet down usually. They say you have to move or stop playing, or else you will get a citation. Not from me, but this other person who I won't tell you who it is until you get the citation, and then you get to know who it is, will give you this ticket, which has a $400, and they don't tell you this, but it's a $445 bail. And unless you pay the bail, you have to immediately go make a court date and appear in court and defend yourself against what may turn out to be the entire mobilized forces of the city. We did. We had a city attorney going after us. This is the guy you heard talking on this this tape that I'm playing. Also, let's suppose you think, wait a minute, I'm doing a political protest. I'm not singing particularly loudly. This person doesn't want me to be doing this because she or he doesn't like my message. Or maybe they are, you know, extraordinarily sensitive. Sean Riley, the complainant in our case, said he was a person who worked at a coffee roasting company. I'm not sure which one it was. He's a coffee roaster, he said, and he worked at night, and therefore he had to sleep during the day, and therefore he felt that noise outside his window, he had a right to shut down. He insisted we were unusually loud, which it was my feeling we were not. We actually have been doing this for some years out in that same spot, and it's actually in the so-called exempted zone, which is a kind of a farcical little set of zones set up in order to placate activists in 2002 and 2003 when these Emily Riley... Emily Riley initiated ordinances were established.
And apparently being ignored, these free speech zones, because you guys had...
Well, it's not really clear. What the free speech zones don't necessarily give you exemption from the unreasonably disturbing noise law.
They may
exempt you from, for example, having to be 10 feet from a statue with a display device. So, for example, there would be, you would have to have a 10-foot setback from the Scribner statue. You would have a 10-foot setback from the statues that are in the planter area next to the Scribner statue, which, of course, leaves zero room for any kind of actual public display devices, donating, playing for donation with a cup or a cap out. Or sitting within 14 feet of any of those things. So the exempt zones may mean, though it's not really clear what they mean, but there are these little golden circles, these little brass, not gold, they look golden, but they're brass circles about 2 inches in diameter in the sidewalk, four of them demarcating a rectangular oblong, which is called the exempt zone. And exempt, you know, I think probably means from, you know, distances from buildings where you're allowed to be. You have to be at least a certain distance, or else you are a menace to the public health and safety, and a scandal, and you get an infraction ticket. And if you get more than three of those, every ticket you get after that is a misdemeanor, punishable by up to a year in jail and $1,000 fine. So, let's hear some more of this. And you're gonna what I was going to do. Was actually
I'm fucking speechless. I don't know. Maybe I should go down to the free speech zone. Mike, some light jugglers. I don't know what to say. I mean, it's fucking it's ludicrous.
Yeah, what it is it is essentially it says, do what the policeman tells you to do. This unreasonably disturbing noise law is a way of, the police were a little nervous about saying, well, if we claim it's unreasonably disturbing noise, that directly puts the power of the city, what may be in an unconstitutional position, is what I suspect might be the case here. Although the city attorney claims, and it may well be true, that there are many cities throughout the state that have unreasonably disturbing noise laws that don't have much to do. They claim they don't have much to do with free speech. They claim it has to do with people, you know, making weird noises at strange times of day and night. This law, however, deals with the period from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., not late at night, not when people are sleeping, but during the day. So what the police are doing is they're coming up and they're saying, you've gotten a complaint, you got to either move along or stop playing. And if pressed, they'll say, or play more quietly. But then they'll say, but you know, it's really up to the other citizen who didn't like what you're doing. We'll take that citizen's complaint and write you a ticket, forcing you to appear in court or put down this bail. And then if you don't leave, they may write you a second ticket. That second ticket will be a misdemeanor. That might send you to jail for a year or $1,000 fine. That's the maximum, probably less, if convicted. And you might get arrested because a second offense within 48 hours, misdemeanors are arrestable offenses. Most of them are. So it really is a way.
How well I know that.
Indeed. So I explained all this to referee Kim Baskett today, or I should say Commissioner Kim Baskett, our judge. And I was. What happened was the judge made a peculiar ruling. She ruled there were two witnesses against myself and Robert Facer, who claimed that we were engaged, that our singing or his very gentle drumming was unreasonably disturbing noise. One of them was this resident, Sean Riley, and another was Officer Schoenfeld. And Officer Schoenfeld, when she came up to us originally, we asked her, is this unreasonably disturbing noise that we're doing right now? And she said, I won't tell you. You know, I don't have to answer that question. I'm not making the complaint. I'm just passing it on. Now, she didn't mention, and I was unable to mention in court because referee or Commissioner Kim Baskett kept shutting me down. Police policy manual states there has to be reasonable cause to give a citation. So, Commissioner Baskett claimed she had to give a citation. Because she was required to by law. If any citizen asks that, they're required to give a citation. And that's not true. Because 20 minutes later, I requested that this same officer give a citation to Sean Riley that said, he's making a false police report. He's claiming we've been here for 4 hours. He's claiming we're playing at a high volume. These are all false statements. He's either incompetent in some way, or he doesn't, or he's simply lying about this issue, or he's oversensitive. But in any case, take my complaint about a false police report, just like you took his complaint about us supposedly being engaged in unreasonably disturbing noise. Her response was no. First, she assured me she would. Then, when it was all over, she contacted her sergeant and said, I won't. I don't believe you. So I brought this up in court. I tried to bring it up in court. I said, look, the judge had said the officer is required to write the citation. She's a neutral party in essence. I said, no, she's not. And then I was immediately interrupted. Yes, she is. You bring me a citation, a legal citation. And of course, she was getting into a lot of argument with Ed Fry, the attorney. And you'll be able to hear that on this tape if we get that far. Ed was very angry about some of her rulings.
That was actually reported on that argument, actually made the news. The Santa Cruz Weekly mentioned that in their article this past week. So,
really?
Yeah, that particular argument.
Well, that argument happened today, so it probably didn't get out on the
net. Oh. So well, there's the second one that he's had with this judge.
He did have a real knockout, braggout battle with Baskett. Sufficient that I was afraid she was going to hold him in contempt. He was raging at her. He was really upset. Because what she said, she would not allow me to say, Your Honor, the police policy manual requires the police department to find reasonable cause before they issue a citation, whether it's from me for a citation to Sean Riley for false information or from Sean Riley giving a citation to me for supposedly giving unreasonably disturbing noise by my political songs. You have to find reasonable cause. If you are going to say simply that anybody who gives a complaint against a musician downtown, you will assume they have reasonable cause, then you are essentially creating what we call the heckler's veto. And that is a pretty clear violation of, first of all, the First Amendment, but second of all, it's a violation of the actual wording of this law. Because this law has a provision that says if what you're doing is necessary in connection with a lawfully conducted activity, then no matter how loud you are, it's not punishable under this law. So I wanted to bring up the issue that Officer Schoenfeld had a bias here. She was deciding to ticket me, but not to ticket Riley. And both of us were trying to make citizen arrests of each other. I was only trying to do it in reaction to what he was doing. All we were doing was singing some songs, distributing some literature, being concerned about the homeless death rate last year, which had the highest homeless death rate in Santa Cruz history, 58 people, I think it was, in the county, which is pretty huge for a city of our size or a county of our size, and raise these issues outside the Bookshop Santa Cruz, where Vice Mayor Coonerty is a pretty key figure. And we were shut down by this individual. And this case should never have even gotten to court. So anyway, my opening statement, I'm going to actually read and give you, the audience, the benefit of even preempting the court. Because I haven't given this opening statement to the court. I reserve this statement. Let's, first of all, however, take the public statement. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and
yes,
Chris.
If this unreasonable law that Robert and the other singers were cited for...
Right, I'm
because
Robert.
...because a person was trying to sleep, right?
That was the argument.
So
that
wouldn't... Yeah, yeah. So a homeless person who is forced to sleep during the day, couldn't they make a complaint for unreasonable noise? I mean, that's the logic here, right?
How are those lights? And that diesel engine they put on...
Oh, they don't have lights anymore. They took them away.
I know. That just came to... I mean, and these laws are so absurd, right? But if...
They can try, but the police officer is likely to say, you know, I'm busy right now. Come back.
Right.
No, catch
right,
me
yeah.
later, you know, that sort of thing. But, yeah, I think that's one response. We can have, you know, a number of people say, okay, I'm making complaints against...
The lights.
Yeah.
Well, it would be
unreasonable noise.
No, that's in pursuit of a lawfully conducted activity that they would
Who
say.
Who says?
Well, probably every police officer in town, I would imagine. But
I don't know about that. I don't know those lights are legal. They don't got a permit for that shit. So that means we can go out and put up a bunch of lights like that.
Sometimes you can. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. You go ahead and try to fire up a 400-horsepower diesel engine on the sidewalk with Klieg lights attached to it. You go ahead and see how long you last before the cops come shut you down, Robert.
I think you're right. I think it would be hard to do. But I'm going to now read this opening statement. Caller, anything else you want to say on this?
Yeah. Just what's so frustrating about these laws that unconstitutional laws that are passed is that the people who enforce this stuff never face any consequences, you know. It's always a person, you know, like, even when the Supreme Court ruled that something is unconstitutional, well, what about the people who suffered from that?
Well,
and the people who actually enforced that and passed it never face any consequences.
Well, they should have demerit pay. I mean, every time a cop...
Right, yeah.
Every time
and
a cop
it's
does
the
a
taxpayers
false arrest...
The are paying for the lawsuits.
Or
right?
Yeah, a bad ticket or a false arrest, the cop should, you know, get a chunk of his pay taken out.
Yeah,
it
should be like a law passed where...
It would make him think twice. You know?
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it's frustrating. You know, it's a good thing to maybe think about, you know, how we should have more laws in this country that would force the resignation of certain officials or, you know, to at least force their resignation so
caller,
they can't be in power anymore.
Have you had some experiences in Santa Cruz recently with the police? Or?
This is Dave from New Jersey.
Oh,
again.
Dave, you're
I
back.
Joycey, you're from Joycey?
I just want to put my two cents in again all the way out here.
All right, well, thanks, Dave. I'm gonna roll on you again.
Yeah,
though,
roll. Thanks
snuck
a lot.
In
all right,
there,
good
you
show. Great
dirty
talk.
Rat, you. All right, this is part of my opening statement at the end of the prosecution testimony. I want to apologize to the court for my inexperience. I don't have the resources or the expertise of the city attorney. Though I'm very concerned with cases like the one before you today, I have argued very few of them before the court. I will be joining generally in all procedural objections made by Attorney Ed Fry. What you have in court today is a serious political case with the full resources of the city attorney's office behind it. I and my co-defendant have been forced to return to court repeatedly, 7 times if my count is correct. The right to sing political songs about the homeless on the street is in an area specifically designated as an exempted free zone is at stake here. And I believe also at stake here is the broader right of the community to hear and performers and activists to present political music and political speech. The power of the city government to chill speech and its actual chilling over the last 9 months downtown is a direct consequence of this prosecution. I am not presenting testimony in this opening statement. I am simply describing what I expect the total testimony will show. I believe the testimony will show that this case involves a political protest, which was mostly taken up with petitioning, recording, buttonholing passersby, serving soup, but with occasional singing by some participants. We will show this protest, like a dozen others before it, done at the same location and involving the same sort of events, feeding, petitioning, recording interviews, displaying signs about the sleeping ban, and for brief periods singing, was no different than any prior protest. The testimony will show this protest took place in front of Vice Mayor Coonerty's bookshop, Santa Cruz, to petition him and the city council to recognize and respond to the extraordinarily high number of homeless deaths in the community last year, as revealed the month before in an official report and ceremony at the Homeless Services Center. We will show this protest was done to urge the community to pressure City Council to stop the harassment of homeless people through such local laws as the sleeping ban ordinance, which drags people to court fruitlessly since most of the year there are no shelter spaces available, and a necessity defense will defeat any of those tickets to begin with, or to end with. The public has seen this, has seen the dimensions of this problem through the number of people sleeping on the steps of the courthouse one building away last month. The protest was, the testimony will show, last January 6th in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, unremarkable, and the same as many other protests. There was singing, vegan soup distribution, compliments of India Joe's, petition signing. Boy, I seem to be repeating myself. I'm glad I'm reading this over. Maybe I can edit it a little. Recorded interviews for Free Radio Santa Cruz, street dialogue with Vice Mayor Coonerty, and the display of informational signs about the death rate. No different from a dozen prior protests, with one exception. On this occasion, a member of the public took exception to what we were doing, and a police officer issued what I believe, what I hope the testimony will show, was an unjustified citation, which had the effect, if not the design, of shutting down our political activity. The testimony will show we were advised around 3 p.m. on a normal business day, a Wednesday afternoon, we were told that our demonstration made it difficult for a resident in the floor above to sleep during the day. The testimony will show that to facilitate that person's schedule, we were essentially coerced into surrendering our right to inform the public in a colorful, legal, and provocative manner about the disturbing situation of the restriction of homeless rights in our community, leading with its grave consequences to health, safety, and dignity. In an area of the sidewalk where such activity is not at all unusual, and we had thought constitutionally protected. Testimony will show that the protest was not unusually long or extended, that it lasted about an hour and a half, though it was cut short by the intervention of Mr. Riley and Officer Schoenfeld from its scheduled two-hour period. The testimony will show the protesters responded to the intervention of a police officer with concerns about the level of noise or singing allowed. It will show the singers stopped singing and didn't sing thereafter. The testimony will show Officer Schoenfeld refused to say whether she found the singing unreasonably disturbing, even though she'd passed by herself and was herself a professional and experienced in the use of this law, Municipal Code 9.36. Testimony will show Miss Becky Johnson questioned Officer Schoenfeld repeatedly regarding an acceptable volume of singing to proceed at, stating she was interested in singing legally. Testimony will show Officer Schoenfeld refused to give any guidelines, but simply threatened to kick us and left, ticket us, unless we moved along, stopped singing. The testimony will further show that apparently annoyed by Miss Johnson's questions and unwilling or unable to answer them, Officer Schoenfeld informed Sean Riley inaccurately that the singers would not quiet down and that he would have to give them a citation. That would, in effect, end the protest for the day and deter our returning for some months subsequently. The testimony will show Mr. Riley believed Officer Schoenfeld did come down and after initially from his room down to the sidewalk, and after initially pointing out six people, signed citations for four of them. The testimony will show Mr. Riley gave those he and officer gave office that he and Officer Schoenfeld gave us no warning previously and expressed some antipathy toward the singers. The testimony will show that Mr. Riley alleged in a subsequent conversation that he had known the singers were not that had he known the singers were not going to continue singing or would be singing more quietly, even though they'd already stopped, that he would not have issued the citation at all. The testimony will show that Officer Schoenfeld miscommunicated, either mistakenly or perhaps out of frustration, the intentions of those doing the petitioning and tabling on the sidewalk. The common sense bottom line here is that in this case, one cannot be found guilty of a law that even a police officer cannot explain.
That's a good one.
The evidence will show that Officer Schoenfeld, though repeatedly asked by Becky Johnson, could not state what comporting with the law would mean other than stopping or leaving. In addition, the evidence will show, A, the demonstrators were not advised that someone was disturbed by their protest by the complainant. They were not told that it had happened beforehand. That the evidence will show that there was no singing after the officers so advised them when that advice actually happened. The evidence will show the police officer was unable or unwilling to advise the petitioners of a legal way to proceed with constitutionally protected activity. And the complainant's concerns, while legitimate and understandable, Mr. Riley's concerns did not rise to the legal, much less the constitutional standard required. These concerns, as I've said to the defendant informally, to Mr. Riley informally, might have been addressed had they been presented to us in a timely and civil way, informally. Instead, they were not delivered at all, except as an ultimatum by the police officer to stop singing and leave or get a ticket. This happened perhaps because of misinformation from the officer in the form of a citation, which acted as a kind of heckler's veto, chilling the speech of the participants, entangling them in a long legal struggle, and discouraging others from constitutionally protected free speech activity for months after. Finally, though we should be concerned about the rights of tenants, the testimony will show it is unreasonable to expect members of the community using the public sidewalk at midday to restrict their speech to accommodate one sleeper who chooses to live on a busy street in a location famous for protests. In anticipation that someone might be sleeping during the day nearby and find it hard to sleep because of the necessary and legal volume of the protest. This will be shown as particularly true for Pacific Avenue, arguably one of the busiest streets in Santa Cruz. To give tenants this kind of veto on sidewalk behavior would allow them to arbitrarily shut down all kinds of First Amendment protected activity, which is the reason I believe this case is so important. There is also significant concern here that the two chief witnesses, Officer Schoenfeld and Mr. Sean Riley, were for different reasons biased in their reports and their testimony. Most relevant to the court, if it doesn't agree with these constitutional objections, the elements of the crime, as specified in the ordinance itself, will have been shown to have not been proved beyond a reasonable doubt. In fact, it will be shown it is difficult for the ordinary person to understand, either complainant or defendant, what those elements actually are. And I'll be talking more about this on Sunday when I come back on the air. And Chris, I'm going to give you the last word in this show, or the last paragraph.
Well, let's talk about Sunday then. Got some exciting programming over at my radio station, which is Unbroken Chain Internet Radio. We're located at ucir.limewebs.com. And I'll say that a little slower, ucir.lime, like the fruit, limewebs, all one word, .com. Going over there, we got quite an exciting program for Sunday. We got 6 hours. And I'm going to try to say it right this time. Think I can get it?
And I hope so.
Bathroom spares broadsides.
No, oh, you are so bad.
No.
Now, we're going to work on that all together now. All together now. Are you ready?
Do the name of your show.
Bath.
Bath.
Robes.
Robes.
Pierre.
Pierre.
Bathrobes Pierre.
Bathrobes Pierre.
Bathrobes Pierre's.
Bathrobes.
In other words, Pierre. It's all right. You can do it. Listen, we're going to work on this. This guy is.
You can say the name of your own show.
Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadside.
There, and that's the show that we're going to air 6 hours of total on Sunday. We're going to start at 10 a.m. With Robert's normally scheduled live show here from Free Radio Santa Cruz studios. Although I may not be here, I'll be down at Peace Camp, I hope. But that will be broadcast in real time, live. You can call in and all the usual stuff that goes on with Robert's shows. And then after, immediately following that, we're going to rebroadcast a show of his that he did, which was, we call it The Great Debate. It was the debate between Attorney Ed Fry and Mayor Mike Rockin. And that was, for me, was an incredible debate. I think the listeners will find it very, very informative. I've trimmed it up and taken out a lot of the extra stuff, so we'll get just the meat of that particular show, although all of it, in its entirety, the show will air. And then immediately following that, we're going to do some interviews and music down at Peace Camp 2010, because the whole purpose of this marathon day of broadcasting is to help them celebrate their two-month anniversary. It'll be two months that this protest has been...
2 months too long.
Bashing it, said, yeah, I know, they're getting the concentration camps ready. Uncle Dennis just walked in on us.
Uncle Dennis, who has no concern about the deforestation along the levee that you were talking about earlier?
I don't know that he has no concern about it. We'll find out what his concern is in a minute. I'm not going to speak for Uncle Dennis. I can barely speak for myself. Anyway, we'll do some interviews and some music and crap like that to celebrate their second month in existence. And then we'll rebroadcast the Wate Group, who is also our featured band of the month of September over at the radio station's website. So we'll rebroadcast the live broadcast that they did at Peace Camp 2010 of their music and their stuff. And then finally, we'll end up the whole day with a show that I did just two nights ago, a live broadcast, and we'll rebroadcast that. So that's a whole day from 10 till 6, I believe, of marathon stuff to do with Peace Camp 2010. Once again, the URL is ucir.limewebs.com.
And you can also find Chris lurking around the coffee houses, begging for cups of coffee, and hoping to also broadcast interviews with anonymous celebrities show up.
Not very often. I do have a morning radio show, a morning talk show I do. It's called Coffee House Live, and it takes place every morning from 10 a.m. till 12 p.m. Pacific time. But I haven't had a lot of luck either getting coffee or getting guests. You're right. I've just begun, and I guess I got to work on that. Maybe
I'll supply the coffee, you supply the guests.
Well, you'll be the guest if you supply the coffee.
Mm, okay. Well, we'll work on that. I'm guested out at the moment, but maybe I'll be able to...
Well, we'll work on it. We'll get you there in the future. But, I do try to just snag people as they're walking through, and I end up with a lot of street people, and they've kind of been getting an extra voice.
How can people actually be on your show if they want to?
They would come by, right now I'm broadcasting from the coffee roaster, the Santa Cruz Coffee Roaster on Pacific Avenue, every morning from 10 a.m. till noon. And they just come on by and score yourself a cup of coffee and sit down. We shoot the shit. We talk about the same thing you would talk about as if it were in a radio station. It's just, that's what Coffee House Live is about. We kind of don't have a lot of direction or theme to it. Although I reserve the right, just as you do on your show, to give it direction or theme, but right now we just kind of shoot the shit and talk about whatever comes up.
Well, Chris, thank you, and thank you all you listeners for hanging in there. Coming up next, it's the infamous Uncle Dennis with From the Cream to the Dregs, plus probably some questionable Earth First updates we're trying to get the FBI to investigate, but they're very busy right now dealing with the terrorist menace. But I give you Uncle Dennis.
Thank you. Sister Will. Let me say it right. Oh, Sister Will.
Yeah, live from Winterland in 1968. Jimi Hendrix starting us off on a Cream to the Dregs tour for tonight as we wander into the realms of rock and roll from the 60s and the 70s. I'm Uncle Dennis. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We are on the air. Yes.
That is too cool, man.
We are modulating the frequency. We are projecting our thought patterns into your universe.
Taking over the universe one sound card at a time.
Yeah, one sound card at a time. Unbroken Chain Internet is fixing their stream over to my left.
Yeah.
Well, our stream is going out fine at www.freakradio.org.
Well, I'd have to get jiggy with it. Give me a break. We're on Hobo Radio here. I run this thing out of a backpack.
radio station on the run.
That's it. It's Hobo Radio, man.
Anyway. I'll be around till about 11 o'clock at night, followed by the Hour of Slack. Stay tuned for that. But before then, we've got the Brew of the Week, which is absolutely unusual tonight. You won't find this in your stores. Absolutely not. And that actually breaks one of my rules, is that I don't review beers that you can't find in the store. But in this case...